My guest at this time is Phil Wright. He's a retired U.S. Army colonel who is also executive director of the Chaplain Alliance for Religious Liberty, and he's the director and endorser of Chaplain Ministries for the Evangelical Free Church of America. We've asked him to comment on two major issues impacting the U.S. military. First, in a follow-up to a story we did earlier this month, the U.S. Navy has now officially rejected the idea of atheist chaplains. Then, on Friday, the Trump administration issued a policy stating that transgenders will not be allowed to serve in the military if they require medications or surgery that could impact their fitness for active duty. So, plenty to discuss for the next few minutes. And, Phil, thank you very much for being with us.
Well, thank you for having me, Greg.
You were a chaplain, obviously, for many years during your time in the U.S. Army, so you know exactly how this debate would have impacted folks in the chaplaincy and really in the armed forces had this application gone forward for a humanist who was applying to be a chaplain in the U.S. Navy. Senator Roger Wicker of Mississippi, a member of the Senate Armed Services Committee who has been very active on this issue, announced last week that the Navy is once again rejecting the application of Jason Heap, who is a humanist, to be a Navy chaplain. What is the significance of this decision?
Greg, you have to understand that the chaplain corps is one of the oldest institutions in the Army. It was first created by General George Washington, and it was to take care of the religious needs of his troops. So obviously, by definition, humanist or human secularist or atheist could not be a military chaplain because the first requirement is to be religious, and their very first comment will be that they're not religious and have no intention of being religious. They're actually hostile to religion.
And so what would that have meant? Some say, well, it's just that there are atheists, there are humanists, there are non-religious people in the military. They need advisors just like people of faith do, and I know that there are programs outside the chaplaincy corps in that respect. But what would you say to the folks who say that there ought to be a chaplain-type service available for folks who don't have an active faith?
I'm fine with them having some kind of service for that, but they don't need to weaken or do away with the chaplain corps and its meaning to offer counseling from those that believe in an all-wise God. And so trying to achieve that end through the chaplain corps just seems to be very disingenuous, and it seems to be more aimed at doing away with the chaplain corps than it is to actually administer to those soldiers of that particular belief system.
When we did this story a couple of weeks ago, it was also with someone who is sharing your position on this issue. It was Chris Gasek over at the Family Research Council, and he said this could eventually just turn into yoga instructors being in the chaplaincy corps if you're going to water down the definition. You're taking it a step further, I think, than he did in suggesting that it's really an effort to get rid of the chaplaincy altogether.
I do believe that, Greg. It's you know, that our chaplains, our Chaplain Alliance is a an alliance of endorsers. Together, we endorse almost two-thirds of the 5,500 military chaplains serving. All of us have very strict standards that our chaplains have to meet, the study that they have to go through, and the ability they have to show to be able to enter the military. And having served myself, I know many commanders would not go downrange into combat without a chaplain in their ranks because of what the chaplains provide for those commanders and the men and women that they lead and the family members that are left behind. Obviously, there's someone back at the installation taking care of them, too. I mean, when you have someone that wears their faith on the sleeve like the chaplain does, you have someone that understands authority, you have someone that's disciplined, you have someone that has a high view of life, and in those murky fog of war situations, I think you would want someone, whether it's a soldier who's pulling the trigger or a chaplain who's trying to instruct them and tell them about just war and about doing right at the right time for the right reason. That's who you want in your formation, and not someone that doesn't have an informed worldview like that.
We mentioned Senator Wicker and Congressman Lamborn. They led the fight to stop atheist chaplains, and it may be hard to quantify, but do you think the decision from the Navy would be the same or different if Wicker and Lamborn and others on Capitol Hill hadn't made a fuss about this?
Oh, Greg, I'm not sure. I'm glad that Congress has oversight, and I'm glad they got involved, and I'm glad that we had the result we did. We serve at the pleasure of the military, and we know that we have to come to the table meeting the standards. There's no easy way in, but we're just very fortunate that we have people in position, our leadership, our civilian leadership, which is part of our military, having oversight, and we were glad that they were able to step in and make such a cogent argument.
Let's move over to the transgender service issue now. The issue came down, the directive, the memo came down on Friday evening, and the president's policy, as he had telegraphed months ago, is essentially that some transgenders will not be able to serve because of the surgeries and the medications that they require does not make them fit for active duty, or perhaps more specific, not deployable to active duty overseas because they wouldn't have the access to the type of treatment that they would otherwise have here. Of course, a lot of folks see this as bigotry. Other people see it as common sense and just injecting wisdom into the fighting force and knowing what's going to be most effective. What's the position of the Chaplains Alliance here?
Well, the Chaplain Alliance affirms the Commander-in-Chief's decision. The number one priority for the military is to be ready to deploy and engage in and win the nation's wars, as well as defend our allies. That means that readiness has to be the priority when you're looking at training and personnel and equipment. And the military is not to engineer social change. It's not a club. It's not to reflect America in a sense. It is to win our nation's wars, to defend the nation and our allies. So we believe that this was the right decision by the Commander-in-Chief to prioritize readiness, to have a force that is physically and mentally fit and ready to go at a moment's notice.
You issued a statement following the announcement of the Trump administration policy here, and while, as you just explained, you like the thrust of it, you don't believe it goes far enough. You think there are still potential problems as a result of the existing policy. Explain what you are concerned about.
Well, we do. I mentioned two issues. The two things that we are most concerned about is the safety issue when you have men alleging to be women and having access to female billeting, barracks, showers, bathrooms. We think that that's an issue that has not been addressed appropriately. And we also think that the constitutional rights of those that believe in a biblical sense of what human sexuality is and don't believe in this cultural and political charade that is going on with trying to make the military the ground for making these social changes. So we are very concerned that the constitutional protections afforded our service members as far as religious liberty are not addressed when those that continue to serve seem to have all of the rights.
Get a little more specific, if you can, on either of those issues. From what you're aware of, have there been complaints about biological men who identify as women being in the same quarters as biological women? And also, are there specific examples of religious freedom being infringed upon as a result of the current policy?
I don't have a example from one of our chaplains about the men having access to the women's facilities. I do know that the chaplains have been challenged on their beliefs as far as it relates to this social policy and this push to have transgendered accepted and serve in the military. We know that we've had chaplains set up by someone wanting supposed counseling and understanding that the chaplain gave that biblical counseling and then was accused of being derogatory or defaming afterwards. And so we're very concerned that the religious liberty of our chaplains and those they serve have been and will be challenged by this policy.
Exit question here, Phil. And these two issues seem to be separate, but in some ways they're connected because of the religious freedom issue that you've mentioned, but also because of the debate over what people are claiming they are when certain facts are suggesting otherwise, like an atheist claiming they can be a chaplain when a chaplain has a certain definition. And you mentioned what's happening with the transgender movement and human sexuality and so forth. So how do you process that? And what's the bigger takeaway for you?
Well, Greg, our challenge is that obviously you have a biblical worldview on the one hand that our chaplains hold to, and that a lot of Americans hold to, and then you have other worldviews which lead to some of these other kinds of belief systems or facts that aren't really truths. You get into, well, that's maybe your truth, not my truth. There is one absolute truth. Our chaplains hold to that. We, with graciousness and kindness, try to share what we believe is the truth and to encourage our service personnel, their leaders, and their family members. And so this is an ongoing challenge that has always been around ever since Jesus walked the earth.
One final question. Right now, is the military a place that is friendly towards people of faith or not?
I think in general it is. I think that obviously you have to carry your weight. You can't walk in and because of your title expect certain considerations. Everyone has to meet the same standards, and I think that our chaplains are out there enduring what our service personnel are enduring, and they're trying to provide leaders with sound information about what is going on in the formation and what's going on out in front of the formation. And I think that when chaplains do that professionally but with reverence and gentleness, that they're able to affect change, and it's a healthy change. It's an effective change for good.
Phil, unfortunately, we'll need to call time there. Thank you, sir, very much for your time today.
Thank you, Greg. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. Phil Wright is a retired U.S. Army colonel. He's executive director of the Chaplain Alliance for Religious Liberty, and he's the director and endorser of Chaplain Ministries for the Evangelical Free Church of America. I'm Greg Corumbus, reporting for Radio America.